When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome everybody to Flickr Effect. I'm Dave Lotz. Joining me for this episode is Bobby Jackson. How's it going, Bobby?
It's going good. How are you?
I am pretty well. And also here, Michelle Hillard.
Hello, everyone. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
This episode, we are going to be discussing Netflix's The Fall of the House of Usher. We are going to mostly share or start off by sharing our thoughts, spoiler-free, for anyone listening who hasn't yet seen the miniseries on Netflix. If we feel like there's stuff we want to talk about that goes into spoiler territory, which I'm sure will probably happen, we'll give plenty of warning before we get to that. Sound good, guys?
Yeah.
I like it.
Real quick, for those who don't know, The Fall of the House of Usher is from showrunner Mike Flanagan, who even just his Netflix catalog includes The Haunting of Hill House, The Haunting of Bly Manor, Midnight Mass, The Midnight Club. This is his latest. He also, in the world of film, directed Dr. Sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That the sequel to The Shining that came out more recently, 2019. So that is what this show, or that's the creator of the show. I don't know. I don't really have like a synopsis ready. I actually had a hard time finding a good like short synopsis of this show. One on IMDb, because there actually isn't a synopsis on IMDb for some reason.
I see
one. There's a couple summaries, but normally there's like a shorter synopsis or like an official synopsis, and I couldn't. There's not
the one on IMDb isn't official.
Well, like it doesn't like there's the ones that I see, the summaries are anybody can write those.
Different from a synopsis.
You can just anyone can submit them, but then there's usually like an official one, I think, that comes from like the studio or something.
So are you going to create a synopsis for us?
No, I'm not.
Oh, well, I can create a synopsis.
I can read this one here. Here's one
summary.
To secure their fortune and future, two ruthless siblings build a family dynasty that begin to crumble when their heirs mysteriously die one by one.
That's actually pretty good. It's pretty straight to the point.
The show or miniseries is, of course, based on the works of Edgar Allan Poe. Not just The Fall of the House of Usher, but it's kind of like a combination of
short stories and
short
poems.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into it. Spoiler-free thoughts on The Fall of the House of Usher. Michelle, what did you think of Mike Flanagan's latest?
I mean, overall, I would say I really enjoyed it. I don't think it's one of his better miniseries works that he's done for Netflix. But it's not low for me on his Netflix series that he's done for them, for the scary stuff that Netflix has him doing. And I think this might have actually been the last thing that he's contractually obligated to do for Netflix right now.
Yeah, I hadn't looked into that. I didn't know like what the official word on like whatever contract he has on Netflix, if this is it or not.
I think this one's it. Okay. And I think he kind of begrudgingly did this one because it was it was before, obviously it was way before the strike and everything like that, but like, you know, I think he had the first three that he did Haunting of Hill House, Haunting of Bly Manor, and Midnight Mass. And I think he had those three, and I think somewhere towards the end of Midnight Mass, before it was released, he was realizing the money aspects of things were not coming back.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not familiar with
I think
any
it's something to do with
story.
Basically what the strike is about, is issues like that, like just credits and monies and anyways. So I think that kind of started a little bit of an issue with him and Netflix. And yeah, he fulfilled his contract, but he is not doing any more production for them.
Gotcha.
Which I think is a shame for Netflix. And maybe he'll want to do some stuff on another platform like Amazon Prime or Apple TV or something like that in the future. I think Mike Flanagan has quite a lot to offer, and I think that it would be great if he wanted to continue kind of doing these like mini series kind of things to continue them. I would love that. That'd be great. Anyways, sorry.
I do think that I want to say he signed with Amazon Prime, but I could be wrong, but I thought I heard that somewhere.
That sounds familiar. Now that you say that, I feel like I heard that too, but maybe I'm making that up.
I don't know for sure, and I don't really feel like Googling it right now, but yeah, I mean, like, his miniseries, in my opinion, are quite good. And I say that, and I enjoyed Dr. Sleep as well. I would love to see more film from him as well. But I'm really enjoying these miniseries, and I love that they're just so, like, they're each of their own little thing, and it's, you know, 8 to 10 episodes, and that's it. Like, it's just, that's it. There's no more. There's no, like, season two. It's like, nope, that was it. He told a complete story front to end. And I'm enjoying what I'm getting. What he's putting out there, I think it's good. Anyways, tangent. No, I actually really enjoyed Fall of the House of Usher. I don't think it's my favorite of the ones I've seen from him, but it's up there in my opinion. I am quite happy with it. I know there's like mixed reviews out there on it. Some people love it. Some people are not loving it. And I'm not gonna set aside like some of the issues I think it has. But I can kind of look past them to kind of what the idea of this was. And I actually really enjoy the way that he basically married, you know, writings of Edgar Allan Poe and kind of inserted them into a storyline and a narrative that's of modern day. And it takes on conflicts of, you know, obviously the drug industry, not just like drugs, like cartels and stuff, industry. But pharmaceutical drugs, the pharmaceutical industry. It takes on, you know, a little bit into like, you know, privileged people and how they are. No, I think it was a great marriage of the two ideas. I think he did a really good job executing it. I thoroughly enjoy all the actors that he has in the show. I think they all do a really great job. Yeah, I guess I won't go too much into it all, but like, yeah, there's a few things that you kind of bump on. I guess it turns out that the show was initially shot with a different lead actor, and then that lead actor was fired, and then they recast it. And so there are some, the good news is, I guess, like, not every scene is with this lead, you know, other actors are not always in the same scenes as him, so they only had to reshoot some of the stuff. But I think for some of the actors that he's in more scenes with, there is an unevenness to some of their character, because I think in scenes where they're not with this main actor, that the main character, their character is one way, and then in the reshoots with scenes that they have with this new lead, their character is a little different, I think. So there's some like character portrayals, I think, that are a little uneven throughout the series, and I think that has a lot to do with it. But no, I'm actually very happy with it. There was definitely a couple of good jump scares. There was probably three where I legitimately jumped on my couch. Hard jumped, holy cow, oh my gosh, clutched my pearls and was like, ooh. And I'd look over at David, I was like, yeah, that got me.
Pearls.
He'd laugh at me. Clutch my pearls. But no, David would laugh at me, and I was just like, I can't help it. Got me. Yeah, and I think it gives just the right amount of gore, but just the right amount of like mental uneasiness and some stuff. I like this one a lot, actually. If I had to compare, I would still say I think Midnight Mass is my favorite of the Netflix works for sure. but this one might be right after it, actually.
Your number two spot.
I think it might be my number two Mike Flanagan Netflix miniseries spot.
Real quick, before I was going to ask Bobby next what he thought, but going to Edgar Allan Poe, what is your background with like Edgar Allan Poe, like love or hate or knowledge? Where did you come into the show from?
So many girls of the elder millennial generation who, once Edgar Allan Poe was brought into their lives in middle school, they had a soft spot for. No, I really enjoyed Poe quite a lot when I was in middle school when we went through those units, and I continued to read his works and study him kind of throughout, and then on and off through high school. But really, I would say a deeper appreciation was when I was in college. I had an English lit class, and of course we did a solid amount of Poe stuff, and it was really good. It was really good to dive into his poetry. You know, I guess there are some critics out there that are like, Poe's poetry is kind of crap, easy man's poetry. Everything's rhymy, and blah, blah, blah. And in a way, it is. And that's okay. Like, not all poetry has to fit into a specific box, in my opinion. And his poetry style was of one direction. And I think it was a little more accessible even for the everyday man to enjoy in his poetry and his short stories. And so I think he wrote for them, and that's totally okay. And it's, I think it's enjoyable.
I was just curious.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm like an expert or anything like that. Like, I've forgotten a lot of that stuff. But at the same time, I say that. And, you know, I could still quote parts of The Raven. I remember some of the short stories pretty well. I guess kind of. I don't know. He's in there.
He's in there.
He's in the brain.
Maybe not the most, like, the freshest knowledge.
Yeah, the freshest. But it's there.
Bobby, how about you? Do you have any affinity for Edgar Allan Poe, or what was your knowledge of his works going into this?
Not much, honestly, other than what you kind of learn in school of who he is a little bit, and you probably read at least one or two of his poems or things about him, and I think that's about all I knew, other than he's just a name, you know, one of those things. So I couldn't recall a Edgar Allan Poe poem, but obviously one of the ones that is more that stands out to me is The Raven. And so I think that's just in popular culture, and it has been for a while. Maybe not so much anymore, just because some of the older popular works of the time have not progressed into current time with the current generation. They probably wouldn't, if you ask someone of current generation who Edgar Allan Poe is, I'd be surprised if some of them knew, and I'm not trying to discredit their knowledge, but it just doesn't seem like it's something that's taught nearly as much as it probably was during our time of school.
Right. Well, what did you think of the Netflix show?
I liked it. I quite liked it, actually. I think for this one, for me, while it probably doesn't rate as high as some of the others, what I do like about this, and same thing I think I like about all the stuff that Mike Flanagan does, is that his cast of characters are always unique, and you can pick them out, and they're given personality, and they're very well, the actors and actresses that play these characters always do such a good job of inhabiting them, so much so that even though he will reuse some of the same actors from project to project, they're so distinctive to me that I'll forget that they were in one of the other ones until I like look it up and I say, oh yeah, that's right, they were in that other one. And so I think that that's one of the strengths of what he does. Him and probably I would say Rian Johnson do such a good job of their casting for their projects that I think that they tend to have these characters that are just very unique, and you kind of go on this journey with them to where you want to see what happens. And I think that was the thing that drew me to this one more so than any of the other ones that in the past have more of the horror element to it or the spookiness. And this for sure has it as well. But I think what drew me into it more was the this story of where this was going and where you see the setup at from the beginning to get to the point where you get to at the end, just following this journey all the way through is what had me wanting to watch episode after episode as I would finish it. The same thing within that, I think, is sort of a double-edged sword in a way for me too, because I feel like because of the structure of the show, of this project, it loses some of its edge to a certain extent. To a certain extent, is that right? Is that the right
extent,
word?
Extent.
Extent. Extent. Thank you. I was like, no, that can't be right. it loses it to a certain extent because of a specific formula that it's using. So it's kind of like, okay, I know what's coming, I just don't know how it's coming. And so I think that was probably the only aspect of it that was kind of like, I wished it would have been more suspenseful in that sense. But you know, it still plays out in a way that I think is satisfying towards that end goal. But yeah, I definitely enjoyed it, and I think Netflix lost out by not having him and re-signing him in the same way that they gave out big contracts to Ryan Murphy and I forget her name from Shonda Rhimes. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they wouldn't have paid big money for Mike Flanagan and what he does, because he seems to bring out one of these series at least once a season around Halloween or so. And they're always solid. So, yeah, I think they really lost out on that. And they probably will be kicking themselves in the future once he's producing good quality content for some other streamer. So I look forward to the next project that he does, because I definitely did enjoy this one as well.
What are you, David?
Well, I was going to say, you know, in reference to him and this being his last project for Netflix, I mean, I'm just one person, but I am, you know, in this day and age now in streaming, with so many different streaming services, we have definitely gotten to the point of like, I have to be more selective now. I cannot subscribe to all of these.
Yeah, with all the price hikes, yeah.
Yeah, with all the price hikes and just how much there is. And I mean, it got to a point where I was like, well, there was a period of time we were really just watching, I think it was mostly like Max and Disney Plus, and we were just at the time really were not watching Netflix, and Netflix is expensive enough. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna take a break from Netflix for a while. And we took a break from Netflix up until this show. Like, I signed up. I would like to think that my data, there's some data collected by Netflix. Yeah. I'm one of those people that like, hey, he signed up and he immediately just watched all of The Fall of the House of Usher. He obviously signed back up for that. And yeah, I'm thinking there's other people maybe in the same boat. And now that we have Netflix, we're gonna prioritize some Netflix stuff and watch through some things we've been wanting to watch. And then it's probably gonna go back off, especially after the most recent price hike. I think it's a great service. With that said, I mean, having not had it for a while, I know I'm going off on a tangent, but having not had it for a while and scrolling through, I'm like, man, there's a lot of good stuff in here. But
at the same time, it's like, wait, there's so many things that we watch that you have to prioritize what's important. I think the problem was, is we were watching so much on Max and on Apple TV and Disney Plus that it was like, I was like, man, the Netflix stuff has just fallen to the wayside, you know? And then every now and then we'd insert like an Amazon Prime situation, a couple shows on there. But, you know, yeah, like I'm very open to we turn on and off Netflix and like Paramount, right? I'm enjoying Paramount with Star Trek, and that's kind of it. So we can turn that back off once we're caught up on that. And then, like, you know, we can turn things on and off now. Same with Peacock. I'm like, things can go on for a month and then turn it off for a few months. Right. And if something else drops, we'll turn it back on for a month, watch that, maybe the other thing, and then call it good. Like, there's just, we can't have them all the time, right? Because I'm not watching them all the time. I don't have the time to do that.
So to your point, I heard something, I think it was yesterday, someone was talking about it. The fact that the streamers will probably, they understand and they see that data that people are doing the churn, where if there's something on, that's when they'll subscribe. And then when it's gone and it's off, then they'll, you know, turn it off. That because of that, they will start to, well, two things. One is that they're trying to push people out of the commercial free zone by raising those prices and keeping the ad tier lower to push people to the ad tier because they make more money off of the ad tier on people subscribing to that. Right. But outside of that, the other thing is that they figure that in a few years, any of the streamers that aren't currently doing it will start to go to a weekly model so that they can stretch you out so that by the time you would want to unsubscribe, here comes that next thing that's coming out to keep you on subscription. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's pretty diabolical when you think about
industry.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in a way you can't blame them, but
yeah.
But anyway,
about the house,
about my thoughts, I'll say going into the show, I guess kind of similar to Bobby, it sounds like, yeah, I remember studying Edgar Allan Poe and reading a couple works or whatever, but it's been so long that I basically went into the show like almost knowing nothing. It's not like I was watching this going, okay, how are they going to adapt to this one? Or how are they going to adapt that one? Like, I would not know. Like, that's basically my point of view going into the show. And also, I've been a big fan of Mike Flanagan, even though I'm not, I guess, a completionist. I haven't seen everything. I didn't see Midnight Club. I never actually finished Bly Manor, which I guess kind of tells you what I was thinking about it as I was watching it. I don't know. I do want to go back and watch that. But I liked Hill House a lot. And I have said repeatedly, I absolutely loved Midnight Mass. Midnight Mass was probably one of the best things I've seen on TV, period, in
the last 5 years.
In a while. Like, what? I thought it was just incredibly good. I have not stopped, like, recommending it to people that I realize have not seen it. And I will be the first person to go, you need to watch Midnight Mass. Mm-hmm. Anyway, this show I enjoyed quite a bit. I would agree with, I think, the sentiments that have been said. I don't think it's his best. And in fact, I think there are definitely issues that will probably get brought up when we talk spoilers that make me look at this show and go, I really enjoy this. When the final episode was done, I was like, that was solid. I think overall this is a solid show. But I really look at this as something like, this could have been incredibly good if, for me, some of these problems I have were not there or fixed in some way. Mm-hmm. And I think they do kind of bring the show down a few pegs. But overall, I really enjoyed it. I agree that most of the acting is pretty good. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what else to say spoiler free other than I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I don't think I walked away from the show going, man, that was mind-blowingly amazing. And there was definitely not a part of me that was like, that was not great. Like, I was like, nope, I enjoyed it. I would say, for the most part, I enjoyed almost every single episode, quite honestly. There's only like two that I think I was kind of like, not so hot on. But overall, I enjoyed most of the episodes. Like, so far, it's doing better than Ahsoka did for me, you know? Like good to bad episodes in a season, yeah, it's definitely surpassed that. Like, no, I liked it.
I will say I hadn't really thought about what you said, Bobby, until you said it, and I agree with you. Like, I like the structure of the show, but you're right. Like, you go into each episode kind of already having a sense of like what kind of episode it's going to be because of the structure of the show. Like, there's not a lot of mystery like you would get in a show that you just have no idea what's going next. So, not to say it's a bad thing, I hadn't thought about that. You're right. It kind of does, it adds something, but takes something away at the same time.
Well, it's like Mike Flanagan kind of has his own antidote that he follows, his own mythologies. But then on top of that, just because of this was being based off of such a, the way the story was being told in such a way, yeah, you did kind of know that each episode, I guess I'll say a spoiler, in each episode there's going to be a death.
And that's not even really a spoiler.
It's not a spoiler. I mean, it's just what it is. It's just the premise of the show. And so it's like, it does get kind of formulaic in that sense because it is doing that. But that's just kind of the way the story, that's just kind of the way the story works out.
Yeah.
Mike Flanagan does kind of have his own methodologies, and a lot of that does kind of eke through to each series he's done.
I mean, I will say, if I had to, based off the things I have seen of his on Netflix, like, yeah, Midnight Mass is easily number one. I'd probably put Hill House at number two. I thought Hill House was solid. This would probably be in the three spot for me.
Okay.
I agree.
So you and I are just flipped.
Yeah. It sounds like you liked it a little more than Hill House.
I like this a little more than Hill House. I did enjoy Hill House quite a lot, but I enjoyed this more than Hill House. And Bly Manor has a lot of issues. Like, it's enjoyable, but there's a lot of issues, in my opinion, with Bly House and with Bly Manor. And for me, that's why the Bly Manor is the low man on the totem pole here. Because I did actually watch all of Bly Manor. And I don't know. It wasn't quite as solid at that time as Hill House was. But I look back now on it and I see certain points that I'm like, okay, maybe it's not as low as I thought it was. But it's, in comparison to the four, for me, it's definitely the low man on the totem pole for quality and story. Anyways.
Any other thoughts before we dip into spoilers? Or sounds like no.
No. Okay.
All right. So then, for those of you listening, this is your warning. We are going to talk spoilers for The Fall of the House of Usher from here on out. If you haven't seen it yet, you should go check it out. I recommend it for sure. I think it's quite good. It sounds like we all think it's definitely good enough for a watch. So go check it out and then come back and finish this. So with
especially because it's Halloween right now. It's perfect.
It is.
It's perfect.
And a Halloween where, like, sadly, I've not watched much of any Halloween, like, horror movies or anything. Mm. Like, I try to every year. This has been, like, it. It's just been a very busy month.
It's been a very busy month. Yeah. But I think it sounds like we're going to be rectifying that in the next few evenings.
Yeah.
Nice.
Anyways.
With that, spoilers, guys. You can say anything you want now. The curtain is lifted.
So, I guess the first thing I want to talk about. So, yeah. Initially, the main character, I guess, is Roderick Usher. Roderick Usher was initially cast as Frank Langella.
Langella.
Sorry. And unfortunately... Maybe not unfortunately.
Yeah, I don't know about unfortunate.
It's not really that unfortunate. I mean, they had most of the series wrapped, but...
It looks like... I thought I read it. Sounds like it was about halfway through
shooting.
So he was not wrapped, but yeah,
halfway. Yeah, he was halfway through. That's a decent amount. He's in... That character is in absolutely every single episode. He was fired from misconduct investigation for sexual misconduct on set and with other people and on set for this and for other place things. And so, yeah, it's not good for him. So he got fired. And then they hired... Bruce Greenwood as that main character of Roderick Usher. And I thought Bruce Greenwood was actually really good. I enjoyed him. I can see and understand where some people might think he's, we'll say, quote unquote, camp, but I did not get that vibe off of him as he was portraying this character. No, I think he was actually one of the stronger actors going through this series. So Roderick Usher is the brother to Madeline Usher. So Roderick and Madeline, and they're based off of the title of the series, but the short story, The Fall of the House of Usher. And Madeline Usher is played by Mary McDonnell. She's probably the only person I think I really had a issue with as far as character. And again, I don't know if it's because she'd already shot some things with one lead actor who was playing her brother, who she's in most scenes, like, they're mostly together. And then other scenes with Bruce, I don't know. Her character seemed the most uneven throughout the whole series to me. And I don't think, also, her character didn't jive with her flashback character of a younger version of herself, a young Madeline, played by Willa Fitzgerald. I just don't think those two meshed in their portrayal of Madeline. And like I said, Mary McDonnell, who I think is actually a great actress, she's quite good in many of the things that she's done. It's so bizarre to even say, like, I don't think this was her strongest thing, and I don't, unfortunately. But yeah, Roderick Usher has 6 children, 4 legitimately with a wife that he has, and then 2 with the wife he has, and 4 the illegitimates with random women. But he takes them all under his wing and promises them fortunes if they make something of themselves, which is kind of the deal.
I was going to say, going back to the, since you brought up the whole like compatibility of the older actor, the older versions of these characters and the younger versions, like, I don't disagree. Like, I think the young and older Madeline Usher don't exactly jive, but I found that the Roderick
was, I would also agree with that too, though,
more of a problem for me.
I agree.
Like, if anything, I again, there was definitely stuff about Madeline that wasn't quite there, mm-hmm. but if anything, it worked for me more than Roderick. Roderick was just like, this is not the same dude.
No. Well, it's like, weird, how did he come into power? Because based on his younger self, he didn't seem like he ever would have gotten into that position more than Madeline would have. But
yeah,
it was just kind of like, yeah, I missed the part where he comes into that person that he is, because you definitely don't see it as a younger version of him.
No.
Yeah, I mean, the actor, Zach Guilford, who plays young Roderick, he, you know, he was in Midnight Mass.
Yeah.
And I thought he was really great in Midnight Mass. And I'll be honest, like, I don't know if it's that Zach wasn't feeling this character, but this character fell very flat to me when he was playing young Roderick. And I just didn't buy that the young Roderick and the grown version of Roderick Usher are the same person. I'm with you guys. Like, I don't think, even up to the very end, like the very last scene where he's young Roderick, I didn't buy that he had this switch to, this is who I am now, I'm this, you know, corporate titan thing. Like, I didn't feel that from him. But like, so in this instance, I think Bruce Greenwood does the better Roderick Usher. But then, like, on the Madeline Usher side, I think the younger version, played by Willa Ford, is a more badass young version. Like,
yeah, Willa Fitzgerald. Yeah,
Willa Fitzgerald, excuse me, is a better in that character when she's younger.
And Mary McDonnell's a fantastic actress.
Oh, totally.
But I would agree. I like the portrayal of the younger version better.
It's like, I don't think those two meshed, but then also just Mary McDonnell, like, there's scenes with her with some of the kids and in other scenes where I feel like she's portraying Madeline as one way. And then she'd have scenes with Bruce Greenwood, with Roderick, and she seemed very different even from that portrayal. And I was like, what's happening here? And I felt like that for me was, it was just uneven. And again, all I can think is it's because she initially shot, some of the stuff stayed where she was just her and the kids from like the original shoot. Mm-hmm. And then the reshoots with her and Bruce were done so far later on that she kind of had to re-find her footing with the character of Madeline.
Maybe, yeah.
So that's still all I can kind of, that's all I can kind of think of, because she's a spectacular actress, but this just wasn't her show.
But then the young and older versions of, and I'm not going to get that character's name right, see, Auguste Dupin.
Oh, Dupin. Yeah. He's a character that's in a lot of post short stories as a detective, but in this he plays the general attorney for, I guess, the state. But yes, I agree. I think the older version and the younger version, yeah, and the younger version being played by
I
forgot his name, Max. No, because he used to be an iZombie. What's his name?
Malcolm Goodwin.
That's it, Malcolm Goodwin. Man, and yesterday I was talking all about Malcolm, how awesome Malcolm is, blah, blah, blah. I can't think of his name now. No, Malcolm Goodwin. And I think the two of them actually, I thought they were synced up really well. I felt like Malcolm Goodwin's delivery of the character and certain reactions he would have was in step with the actor who's playing the older version of Dupin, of Carl Lumbly. Yeah.
Yeah. I do feel like with Carl, he kind of got the short end of the stick a little bit, because it felt like to me every episode I could count on him making a face of shock or something and just staring blankly. But you know, it's like, is there an actor on the other side of him? Because it's just a front, you know, a point of view in front of his face, and he's like in shock of whatever is going on, of what Roderick is doing. And so I was like, and there's a lot of those shots. So I was like, man, he's not gaining as much to do as the younger version, once the younger version comes into the story. And then, of course, you get a little bit of stuff with him towards the end there. But for sure, I was like, man, he's not getting a lot, but just sitting in this chair and just sort of reacting to things.
Right. Mm. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I feel like he has a little more dialogue towards the end of the series as a whole. Yeah. But,
right.
I guess the only other main character would be the character that is named Verna, but they don't, I wouldn't say they really established that that's her name very much during the show. But that character is played by Carla Gugino. Gugino. Carla Gugino, who's been featured in all of the series that Mike Flanagan has done for Netflix. And she's fabulous. I think the best thing to equate her to, if you were to like give her character, I mean, her character, they're calling it Verna, I guess it would be, she's like death in a way. The best way to kind of put it. She's
yeah.
a mystical character. Like, there's no real definition of what she is, but if I look...
A devil character, like, maybe, but...
I don't even know if I'd call it a devil.
I'm saying, like, yeah. not yeah. necessarily... I don't mean literally, like, she is the devil, but, like, there's definitely, like, a making a deal with the devil kind of...
yeah, it's kind of a deal with a deal with a devil. I think it's... Yeah, she's kind of like a devil or... I think the reason why I think you can just call her like death, like they made a deal with death, is because so much of Poe's work, there's one of the characters that never has a name, but the character is death, is featured a lot in his poetry and his short stories. And so it makes me think she's just playing the character of death, and the Usher siblings made a deal with death.
Right.
Anyways, sorry. I feel like I'm rambling here.
No, you brought her up. I thought you were going to...
No, I was just going to say, actress. I think she was also fabulous in this as well. I would say she's probably the best actor in the entire thing. Solid. Start to finish.
Yeah. I don't know if I disagree with that. I guess I hadn't thought about like who I thought was the best performance or anything, but no. I mean, she's solid. What did you guys think of Mark Hamill's...
I liked Mark Hamill as Pym.
I liked him too.
The Pym Reaper.
No, I thought he was good.
I thought he was good as well.
I liked it a lot. I like it when I feel like you see Mark Hamill do darker characters when he's behind the camera and just on mic work. Mm. You know, when he does a lot of cartoons and stuff and animated things.
Work, yeah.
He'll kind of go dark. I feel like you never see him become kind of a darker character in front of the camera very often. So this was a nice thing to see him do. It was fun.
Yeah. I was curious, too, what you guys thought. I mean, for me, when it comes to this portrayal of the family and, you know, how kind of crooked they all are, but at the same time, I don't know. There was a dynamic about most of the kids, most, not all. But I would say most of the kids that were was like, I feel like I should think they're more despicable than I think they are.
Mm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like the show is being, the story is being told in a way where I think these are just mostly all terrible people, except for the granddaughter, Lenore. Like, other than her, it's like, these are all just shitty human beings. And they are. I mean, there's no doubt that they do things, some of them more than others, that are, you know, pretty terrible. But at the same time, like, there's something about their portrayals where I'm like, but they're not, it's almost like they're not unlikable enough. And I guess in a way, I guess I can see why that would be done on purpose. I mean, you know, yeah, if you had a show where really all of your cast are just really terrible people, I mean, I guess you could go, well, Succession. But, you know what I mean? Like, maybe that wouldn't just work as a good viewing experience. I don't know. Like, am I making sense?
Or no, do you guys get that vibe at all? It's not like they're, like, relatable, but it's, like, certain things that they would do, it's kind of like, it's almost like, I hate to say it, but it's almost like I understand that they became this way because of XYZ. And it's like, no, in a way, it's almost like I think maybe the advertising made it seem like they're evil people. And I'm like, they're not evil. They're not awesome. But they're not like evil and bad. They're just, I think they're just spoiled rich kids kind of that are having their adulthoods kind of handed to them in a way. I mean, like, so like the best thing I could say is we listened to another podcast talk about the show. And I don't disagree. None of the people in the Usher family have ever actually created something themselves. Like, from scratch, created something. They all kind of, you know, fall, they always kind of wind up going in a pathway where it's like they're part of something, but they're not really creating it. They're helping to fund it or something, you know? And so I feel like none of them have had a hard day's work in their life. And so they're privileged. They're not awesome. They're snotty and they have opinions and they're bougie.
Do you have any thoughts on that, Bobby?
Well, it is funny that you bring that up because I thought about that and I'm not quite sure what the intention was. Was it for them to be sympathetic to a certain degree and you're supposed to feel for them? Because if that was the intention, I think for me, it slightly missed the mark because as you sort of just mentioned, David, you talked about Succession and with those characters, I remember outright not liking them in the beginning of the show in the first season. But as the show goes on, there's nuance to them and there's shades of gray. And then you're kind of like, okay, mm-hmm. They're still not great people, but I don't wish totally ill will on them. Whereas with this, I feel like if they wanted to do that, they could have given them a little bit more depth. But what's given there, I was not sad to see any of them go and was fine with when they did go. So I don't feel like it worked well enough for me to have been quite sympathetic with some of the characters. But I felt like, obviously, like you said, Lenore is the exception to the rule, and her mother. She didn't do anything terrible, you know. But, most of the other characters, I was like, sort of, you know, rubbing my hands together, waiting to see how they were going to get it in the end of their episode. So, yeah, I think that, for me, I felt like it maybe just slightly missed me being sort of sympathetic to not wanting to see any of them get their just desserts, so to speak.
Gotcha. But you were going to say something, Michelle.
I was going to kind of start moving along, I guess. I was going to say, I don't know if you want to go episode to episode.
Oh, no, I wasn't going to go episode to episode.
But I would say, I feel like, I think my favorite episodes and my least favorite episodes, maybe.
Sure. What were your least favorite?
I'll be honest, I think actually my least favorite was the very first episode.
It's funny you say that because by the time we finished the show, which we finished in a relatively short amount of time. I mean,
for you and I, that was short.
For us, that was short. I mean,
it was 5 days.
We did not just binge it over the course of a day or two. It was a few days for sure, but we finished it relatively short. Yeah. And then I go back and I try to think about that first episode and I'm like, I don't remember a lot about that first episode. Maybe it's because once we got into the rhythm of the structure of all the deaths, mm-hmm. I feel like then the first episode is cloudy, almost like I need to rewatch it.
Okay.
Just side note. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm saying it's not my favorite. I'm not saying it's a bad episode. It's just that first episode had a lot to kind of set up and you're trying to kind of get a grasp on the situation kind of quickly in a way. It's kind of like, okay, he's at the second funeral and they're the final three children he has. You're like, whoa, what has occurred? And it just, there's a lot it's trying to do in one episode, in my opinion. It's trying to set that stage. It's trying to set the stage that he's telling the story to Dupin. He's trying to tell the story of his sister and him and his mother in that situation. And there's just kind of a lot kind of happening, and so you're never really getting a full depth on anything in that episode. It just seems kind of all over the place a little bit. It's not bad, but it's just, it's kind of a lot in a short amount of time. I feel like, yeah, by episode two you really get its footing, it gets it more into its footing, and I think episode two is actually one of my favorite episodes, quite honestly. I thought it was executed extremely well. Just story, the story that it's based off of, how it was utilized and then written and then executed, I think is probably my favorite. It's almost this episode two, one of my absolute favorites. But yeah, that first one, I think, is just kind of, there's just a lot happening.
Right. Like, I could see, going back to the conversation about all the kids and like how they were portrayed and even just developed in the show, it's like I could see a world where this was a 9 to 10 episode miniseries, and maybe there would be more room on the front end of just character development. Mm-hmm. But then I could also see that that kind of show might just turn people off after episode 2 and they don't even get that far into it,
right.
You know? So,
right. Or gotten more of their characters kind of spread throughout, the deaths not being so back to back.
Yeah, like I can see why that he just very quickly got into it. Each episode is a death formula. Let's just do this like this, instead of like having more breathing room at the front. But the part of me that really enjoyed this, which is I could have had more time with these people.
Yeah. Maybe developed
before the drama really, or the shit really started hitting.
Yeah. Maybe developed a little more like, that dude was kind of an ass.
Right. Because there were things like, especially characters that died early on, like Kate Siegel's character, for example.
Yeah.
Like
Camille.
I felt like going into her episode, which was episode three. I didn't really have a good sense of her yet. Like, you know, like there's things that seem kind of shitty about her, but then like, I don't know, things that are kind of like interesting about her.
She was an interesting crap person.
Right. And I was like, I kind of am curious. I'm a little curious about this character. I want to learn more about this character. But yeah, she dies pretty fast.
I will say what's interesting about that third episode. The third episode is entitled
Rue Morgue.
Right? It's the murder at the Rue Morgue. And the first part of that episode, I kind of was thinking it was actually going to be Victorine's death. Just because it takes place in her work. Like that's her laboratory and everything. Right. And then there was a scene that Camille has with her brother Leo in his apartment, his big nice 7-floor up apartment that he has, and there was a scene with them, and I was like, oh, is this gonna be about her death? I was like, dang it. And I was so bummed out like the rest of that episode. Just because I knew that the character was gonna die. I'm like, but she's such an interesting jerk. I want to know more. And plus, I also just love that actress. Like, I was like, I want to see more. I want more of her. And I'm really bummed that she's the second death. Right. Like, of the children, I should say. Technically, it's the third death, technically. But it was a bit of a bummer, in my opinion, that she was so early on, too.
Bobby, did you have like favorite episodes or favorite deaths or least favorite? Well,
that's what I was going to ask. I was going to ask the two of you, what was your favorite death out of all the kids or death scene?
Ooh. I will say, okay, it's kind of tricky. I think if you'd asked me this before we finished the whole series, I would have said that it was the youngest, Perry's death, the red mask. Mask of the Red Death. The second one, the very first of the children to go.
The club, like, acid scene.
The club acid death.
Quite horrific.
I would say, like, that one probably wasn't my favorite death, but it was probably the most intriguing execution, I think. I enjoyed that. Oh, and that sounds horrible to say.
I was just like, side note, like that whole scene played out, and I think you go back to the club in the next episode and everything, and it's just like, is it worth it trying to bury all these people? Just burn this building to the ground.
it's just a mass
like a flesh, just like, it's just so effed up. Well, and like, I'm just like, it's not worth
so
it.
Gross. Like, and like, it's so fun. Like, I'm watching it, and you're watching the Pym Reaper go in. I'm thinking,
you imagine the smell?
The smell. I think I said that. I was like, can you imagine the smell? Like,
oh my God.
Yeah.
I would say that was the most interesting death, but it was not my favorite. I actually think it was the oldest daughter. I think her death was probably the most. I think I liked the execution of it with the mirrors. It was probably the one that really made me cringe. I mean, it's funny to say, like, the acid one kind of made me, like, cringe a little bit. That one really made me cringe, just the thought of the mirrors smashing and her just completely spiraling out. Like, she's completely spun out. She's no longer there. And you could say that about like Leo, with the black cat. Like he was completely gone, like totally lost control, all spun out. I mean, all of them did.
Watch him use Mjolnir to like destroy his house.
That was entertaining as hell.
That was pretty entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah, getting Mjolnir and smashing all the walls. That was kind of funny. No, but I think the oldest sister, the second born, I think hers was the most like, okay, I really liked this. I really enjoyed her death scene. I thought it was really, really good.
I was going to say the same thing.
Really?
I had to think about it. But yeah, I think that one was the most well done scene overall of her actual death. Just the shot, the
execution,
like the execution, and her just laying there with that piece of mirror in her neck, and just
see, it makes me kind of. I would say the most like, yeah, I can't wait till this bastard dies. This is definitely the oldest son.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt by the end of the series, he was setting himself as just being the absolute worst. Like,
yeah. And by the end, it was just like, oh, God, I can't wait till we just kill this bastard.
Oh, yeah.
Like, and then watching it, I was like, that was one of the most satisfying deaths watching. I was like, oh, this is satisfying. Plus, it was a cool scene to watch. To watch a building, like, be demolished from the inside. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
So what about you, Bobby, then?
Yeah, Bobby, let's talk about you.
I kind of wish I went first because you took everything I just was going to say. I thought the eldest daughter's scene visually looked the best, just the slow motion of that crashing of the glass and her falling to the bed, and you just knowing as it's coming down what's happening, and I just from the way it was shot and it looked, it was just the best one to me. And then my one that I thought was most satisfying was the eldest son, which you just getting that guillotine of that whatever it was from the building slowly coming down at him, and you just know it's going to start cutting away at him, and sure enough, and it's just like, you know, yeah, at one point in time, this guy was the first son and first kid, and comes to be sort of like the last to die, sort of all the ushers, at least the kids, and it's like he is one of the most horrific ways to die, because you have time to think about it, because it's slowly coming at you, and so
and he was paralyzed, he couldn't do anything about it, like he's just watching it. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And so yeah, I definitely like that, and it's funny too, because I will forget but then remember at intermittent times that this was the young kid from E.T., like that was Elliot. And I'll picture him as that young kid sometimes when I'm seeing him as an older actor, Henry Thomas.
It's weird, right? Like, I noticed the same thing. And what is it about him? Like, there's tons of actors, like, we've seen, like, in tons of things since child actors. But there's something about him that you're right. Like, every time. Maybe it's also because I haven't seen him in enough. Like, he...
Yeah,
it's not
he's
like,
stopped acting for quite a few years.
It's not like Drew Barrymore, where she kind of...
We watch her really age.
That's true.
He basically was at like the prime height of like childlike innocence. And he was portrayed at this age of like, this is the loss of the innocent time frame. And you're about to start going into major... Your puberty is really going to start going to high gear here. And so he has this hugely innocent childlike face when he's in E.T., and there was a number of years he wasn't acting, so we didn't see him slowly actually age into full maturity adulthood like we did, like, say, with Drew Barrymore as a perfect example. We watched her literally grow up the whole time.
Yeah.
And then to see him just, he's an adult. He's just a 30-something-year-old man acting again. Well, now he's 40. But, you know, it was like, oh, you know, he kind of came back in his 30s a little bit. And
right.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But I was going to say, go ahead, Bobby. You finish up.
Oh, yeah. So I was just going to say that definitely for me, the saddest was Lenore. And just seeing, I can't remember which episode it was exactly. It might have been episode 7 where Verna, I guess, lays out everything, the pact. And it was within something she said at the time of your generations or something. And I don't think they had caught it at the time, the two of them making that deal about their kids. But it was something that she said that in that moment, I was like, wait, does that go past the kids and into the grandkids too? And I was like, oh no. And then I started thinking about it. And then sure enough, you get to that part when she's like, and this one I kind of hate. She starts something to the effect of, you know, this one makes her the most sad to have to do. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, oh man, that sucks.
Which but, I will say, like, yeah. that whole scene, that makes me think that she's deaf and not per se like a devil.
Right, right.
Because even death can be sad about killing, taking somebody. Even death could probably look upon a child and go, I'm really bummed that
I... Which you see in Sandman, the series.
Yeah, you know, it's like, oh, I guess I'm, yeah, I guess this is part of the job, you know? And so I think for me, she's kind of, she's the character of death. But what I was going to say was, it's interesting. I think I actually really enjoyed everybody's death. Like, I think all of them are done really well, actually, if I really sit and think about it. And maybe, like, some are a little more exciting than others, a little more flashy than others. But I like them all. I think the only one I actually don't like is Leo's death in The Black Cat. I think his is the most, like, oh. Huh. Okay.
Yeah. I guess if I had to pick a least favorite, maybe his would be my least, maybe. But
I think his would be my least just because it was just so, like, oh, he... really just went off the deep end and then he jumped off his balcony because he was trying to kill an imaginary cat. Like, it was so like, oh, shit. Okay.
But I will say, even though it's not like my favorite death for the character per se, but I will, the scene of the end of the Telltale Heart is...
just about to say that.
Is disturbing. Pretty well done in its extremely disturbing way. Like, the sound and the going into the room and like her, like just the chest opened Splate. And just, it's so messed up.
I think that's the most really disturbing one in my opinion too, like disturbing, like right. the most like, oh God, like, cause yeah, she's splayed open and this is someone that she loved, that she killed, and like, it's disturbing because you can see how far off the deep end she is now clicked. And there's a point you're like, oh man, is she going to kill her dad? Like,
and yeah, even I think he that adds to it too.
It does.
Because he's there to witness it.
He sees it.
Sees it, yeah.
He sees what's happening and he sees that she's just gone off the deep end. And then he's fearful of his life because, yeah, she's gone, dude. Like, so even he has a flash of fear that he's, that she could kill him. Like, she's like, he's sitting there thinking, wow, she just killed the love of her life. What, she could turn on me. Like, no, that one was probably, I think, the most disturbing, like, mentally, like, whoa, that is, whoa.
Yeah. Now, going back to, like, some negatives for me.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll, the biggest one, and this is like just a moment in the show overall, it's not like a big overarching problem, but one moment in the show that just really took me out of the show and I was really like, oh, I do not like this, like, was the photographs of her, of the Verna character, right? Mm-hmm. Like, with all of these, you know, true historic. In history, historic characters, you know, at first it's like, I know who the Koch brothers are. And I think that was the first picture, right? And like, obviously I know the Koch brothers, but I don't know what they look like. And he shows that photo and I, you know, you're hearing Roderick go thinking about this person, Koch or the Koch brothers or whatever. And I'm like, wait, are that was like, that's the real Koch brothers. Is that what we're doing here? And then the next picture I think was Zuckerberg. And I'm like, oh, really? Are we like, and I mean, I'm coming across super, super negative. Like, I just straight up hated it. I mean, I don't know maybe if I hated it, but there was something about it that just, like, this wasn't necessary to do this. I mean, I guess in the development of the characters understanding what they're dealing with, it's kind of understanding. But for example, like, there's a moment in the final episode when that the character Verna like mentions the line that Donald Trump said about shooting someone on Fifth Avenue, and most people would know what she's referring to. She's referring to like it's something Trump in real life said, and that is, I think, a better way of handling that kind of like development than like these straight up photos of her like with all of these people. Like, I don't know. I didn't care for that.
I think it was, yeah, it just didn't really work. In a way, and it's like, I guess I kind of get why they did it, but it's like, I feel like they could have been, it felt a little too in your face about it, I guess. Like, it would have been interesting if it had been a picture of, say, like, the royal family, and then you just kind of slightly see her in the background, kind of like a very, you know, Doctor Who, just a little bit of the face. You don't see the whole picture.
She's like almost perfect photos of her is more kind of what you're getting at.
These pictures are like perfect photos of her, and then be cool if it had been like, you know, maybe more relatable, like interesting, like rich families that fell apart in dynasties like that, and then like the Kennedys. And I think it would have been like, they're not necessarily bad people, but they're like really interesting public figures that have had really interesting like falls. Well, you know what I mean?
For me, I could imagine a situation where it was done where you still have the same kind of scene with photos, but they don't have to be real people, like in real life. But the characters are responding to the photos in a way that you as a viewer go, okay, like these are in this world, these are were terrible people that they didn't really exist. But you know what I mean? I think that might have even worked better for me than what they did.
But yeah, I think it would have been interesting to have her, like I said, like she did the Donald Trump quote. It would have been interesting if she quoted like other figures and like other creepy stuff that people would know too, that have said like really weird, like off-putting things. I've been like, oh wow, Jesus, she has been around the, she's been around for a little bit, you know?
Any thoughts on what I'm saying, Bobby?
I see where you're coming from. I think when I watched it, it didn't register other than it was like, oh, that's a bit on the nose. But at the same time, I kind of was thinking like, well, it's one of those things where it becomes a debate about subtlety versus right in your face. And
yeah,
that happens a lot with different types of movies with a message, whether, even though I haven't seen it yet, Killers of the Flower Moon, I've heard some debate out there in terms of from both sides, from people who are like from that descendants of the Osage that are like, this is sort of just too graphic and too much. And sometimes that happens in movies that deal with something like slavery, and it becomes what they call like slavery porn. It's just like a lot. And sometimes I'm like, I see both sides. I'm like, sometimes it is a bit much, but then at the same time, I'm like, some people need to see a bit too much because they don't get it when it's subtle. And so it's like, I kind of see that in Mike Flanagan's choice there. It's like, yeah, I can do subtle, but I kind of want to put it in your face and right, in a way that you can understand it. And so I see it from both sides. But yeah, like in the moment I could see it, but I didn't hang on it too long because it isn't too long within the context of everything.
And luckily it's not, right?
Yeah.
Right.
And I think more than anything, the thing that I come away from this series with, which I will probably at some point in time go back and rewatch, is the monologue that Verna does when she talks about humanity and the things that they could do, but the things that they choose to do. And I was like, yeah, that's such a good speech that she gives. And so I think that that's in and of itself the whole moral of the story in terms of what comes across within this thing. And I agree that where some of the messaging could be a little blunt, but... And sometimes I think some people kind of need to be hit over the head a little bit.
No, I get that. And I, like I said, I guess when I was kind of bitching about it, like I didn't hate it. But right, it's just something that I bumped on, brought me out of the show for a minute, where it felt like this doesn't feel like this belongs in this show. Like almost.
Yeah, like it felt like it was almost, they're just, it's a little over explanation.
Right.
But
I get what you're saying, Bobby. Like, you know, in terms
maybe
of,
some people need to have a message. Really, yeah.
Another thing, you know, I guess my main things with the show overall, like that moment, which again was just a moment. You know, we already talked about the younger versions of characters and the older versions of characters, and definitely not jiving And then another, this is more of a nitpicky thing, and I guess this comes down to budget. Like, there is certain visual effects kind of stuff that I felt like, this doesn't look great. Like, the shot in the last episode of all the bodies falling.
Yeah.
It's fine. In one way, it looks kind of cool the way it's done, but it's also just like, this doesn't look great. Like, it's unfortunate.
There's reason then why they did it at night.
Yeah. With like lightning kind of like flashing, the
bounce being reflecting able to even see the bodies.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's just, I think, you know, it's a budget thing.
I agree. I feel like the graphics might not have been the best. And I feel like there might have been a better way to have executed the visual of the body count instead of that way. But yeah, I'm with you. I think maybe that one, I bumped on that one too, but it was kind of like, I guess it's just kind of budgeting thing. It is still that, just Netflix at the end of the day.
You're right. Not that I have a solution for a better way do that as a visual like message.
Representation, yeah.
But I, you know, maybe there could have been something better than like, oh, I'm looking out the window and look at all the bodies falling.
There's bodies raining from the heavens. Yeah. I was going to say, like, I think there's another thing. Well, actually, I'm curious. What did Bobby like and what did you not like about the show, maybe? Is there anything that you kind of bumped on?
I think I talked about it throughout the review of it, honestly. Like how I sort of have the double edge of how the structure of the show is in and of itself, and it losing some level of tension, knowing that someone's going to die in this particular episode. Just that and some of the performances and not sort of being enough there for some of the characters, like David mentioned as well. And, you know, but nothing that was like glaring, just a few things that, as again, as David said, sort of knocks it down a few pegs. Nothing that's just like, oh, this was the worst thing. I need to turn this off right now. But just little things that there's no perfect, you know, show or thing or whatever that you're going to bump up against some things. But I think that mine were minor enough to where it didn't derail any of my enjoyment for the series as a whole. So, yeah, I think I kind of mostly mentioned my things, though.
And I was going to say, too, I think, you know, there's a lot of risk here watching a show like this. It's building up to a big ending, and it's just, you know, it's just a mini series. Mm-hmm. This isn't going to go into another season. Mm-hmm. Like, how's the finale going to be? Is it going to really, like, stick the landing? And I thought it did overall.
Yeah.
Like, even if I have a nitpicky moment, like the visual effects of bodies, other than that, no, I thought the finale was quite good, and I was pretty happy with the ending.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would say if there was a death that was also kind of not satisfying was honestly Roderick's death at the end. And I get the whole thing was basically that his sister was recreating the same scene that their mother did in killing their father, you know, being resurrected kind of in a way and then choking him to death. But it was a little unsatisfactory. That one was a little bit like, oh.
That reminds me, though, of a question then I'll have for you guys, because maybe I felt like I was missing something, or maybe I did miss something overall in the show. I mean, given the deal that was made, that we see portrayed, I think it was in the last episode, maybe it was episode 7, but
it was like 7 and 8. We watched them back to back, so those kind of meshed for me a little bit. But
when we
so.
Actually see the portrayal of the deal, what was it? Or I guess, like, I was slightly confused of the train of thought of Madeline and, like, you know, hey, you just need to basically kill yourself, right, with the pills, like, to finish this off.
Like,
she was kind of acting like that would make it a done deal and then she would get out of it. But why would she think that? Why would she think that she would get out of this?
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was almost like they just did that. I would say that was something I bumped on too, because I thought it was kind of weird. Like, why would she try to kill him? Like, because then, the scene of the actual, like, deal, it's pretty clear. It includes her in it. Like, they both going to go at the same time, basically.
Right.
Like, it seemed pretty clear to me, at least, when watching that scene. So, for her to try to trick Roderick and kill him that way, I don't know. It was kind of bizarre.
I mean, it seemed partly like, hey, I want, you know, she was obviously going for her power with the company, but again, she knows that this deal includes her. Yeah. Like, what, you going to have power for a day or two and you die? I don't understand. Like, Bobby, are we missing something, or did you notice that at all?
I don't think you're missing anything. In fact, I don't think I really had thought about it until you just now brought it up. And I was going under the impression of the whole power thing, where if anything, I thought maybe she wasn't all the way clear on the rules, and that I would have to go back and rewatch it. But at one point, I think I remember her saying the reason why she didn't have kids, and she made sure she didn't have kids, is because of, like, part of what the deal was. And so I don't know if she thought that just the kids would die and not them, but I can't quite remember. But obviously, once she starts seeing everyone die, and then maybe, and that was her thought process, that if she killed off Roderick, that she was supposed to continue on because she had no progeny or anything. I don't know, but it's a good question. I'd have to go back and rewatch that.
It's something that I don't think the show did a good enough job of like,
yeah, basically
explaining. Because, yeah, I mean, when you see the show portray the deal, it's like you said, Michelle, it's super clear. Like, this, she says, like, it's the, you all take a curtain call together, like, everybody, I include you, sister.
It,
like,
is the end of your bloodline will end. Your right. bloodline, and, like, that's the big and sentence, I mean, there.
Could, the show could do something, I think, to be like, well, it's obviously been a long time since the deal was made, and it took even a little bit for them to realize who that was, like, because mm-hmm. it's been a while since they've right. seen her, and, you know, it's just memory. Maybe it's a memory thing, but I don't know. It wasn't enough there for you to include that moment in the show, but then, like, not give a better explanation as to why she would do that.
Like, yeah, it was kinda weird. It was kind of weird. It's like, yeah, she, in the deal scene, she picks up on, oh, if I have children, they will also fall under this. And you can pick up that she catches that, but she misses the whole, like, end of the bloodline thing, or you're both going to go at the same time thing. Like, you're both a part of this deal. Like, it's like,
well, because I mean,
pick up on that.
If you rewatch the scene, I mean, Verna specifically goes to her to say, "Yeah, it's you too." Like, it's extremely explicit. It's not even just picking up on the kids. It's like she tells her, "Like, yeah, it's you too, honey. Like, you're a part of this. The whole family. Blah blah blah." So yeah, it's weird for her to even think that it didn't include her, given what you're shown in the show.
Yeah,
and again, I'm going to return to, I really liked almost every scene with Verna. Every conversation she has with a kid, and she always gives every single one of those kids kind of like almost like an out. She gives them that moment of like, your fate is in your hands here. You can make a different decision. She does it to almost every single one of them. And I think it's really enjoyable. But I also just think I really enjoy her conversations with them. Like, I really like her conversation that she has with Camille before she reverts back into the chimpanzee formation. That I think is a really interesting back and forth conversation that they're having. And then there's other conversations she has with them that are just so good. And obviously, like, the end monologue that she has with Roderick, but it's like, I really enjoyed her sitting down with Madeline in the old house. I enjoyed her sitting down with Pym and having the conversation with him. I thought that was a really good one too. Like, they're just basically every time that she was on the screen, that character was just so enjoyable. Like, the way she was executing it, and then just the actual character and the way it was written and the dialogue they had for her. I was like, man, they are killing this character. It's awesome, in my opinion. I enjoyed those.
I did wonder about the out that she kind of presented to them and how that would work. That if they had taken that out, does that mean that they would have just gone on to live and died of their own natural causes, or would she have continued just to try to
circle back around to them?
Yeah.
See, I guess I'll admit I didn't really find that she was giving anybody any outs. Like, at least that's not how I was kind of seeing the episodes. Like, you think, for example, like the first one with the acid scene. I mean, there's never a moment of like, or at least I don't remember there being a moment of like, hey, you could do something
she
different.
She kind of does. I mean, when they're, she does, so yeah. There's the bedroom scene where she gets him upstairs and she's on the bed and she's talking to him and she's saying, you know, like, you can just end this night here. You can just send everybody home. Nothing needs to happen. We can just call this over, this done for the night. Like, you can walk away from this. And he's like, no, this is just getting good. And she's just kind of like, okay, I guess we're doing this. All right, Playboy. Let's do this then. Then she like teleports from the bed to the door, and he's like, wait, what? And she's like, gone. And so she's like, oh, that was the moment. He had that moment, gone. And then with Camille, it was, honey, you can just go back to your car. You don't have to go through that locked door. You can turn around. You don't need to be here. You don't have security clearance, blah, blah, blah. Why should I let you in? And then, right. You know, with what's his name and the Leo and the cat, like, you don't have to adopt the cat. You can just adopt any other animal that's here. Like, any of these other cats are great cats, but you want this black. No, you don't need this black one, you know. Like, she does it for all of them. They all get this moment. Well, but then what's the occurrence if they, like you're saying, what's the occurrence? Like, what
I guess, but then if you want to, I guess, really get into it, I mean, you could argue, though, that she obviously knows what's going to happen. She clearly knows the future.
Oh, yeah.
In this world, like, she knows everything that's going to play out because she tells, you know, Lenora, like, what's going to happen in the future with her mother. So you could then argue, I guess, like, she's not really giving him a choice because there is no choice. Like, all right, so we could get into, you know, free will argument.
Yeah, free
like,
will.
she's like, hey, because, yeah, the deal is, like, we've said, like,
oh, she's
they all are going to die. Yeah. So, like, the chance she's giving them, which maybe I see what you guys are saying. There's definitely chances. Like, there's not really, she knows they're not going
to. Maybe she just does it to kind of toy with them. So that way, in the last minute of death, they can go, oh, damn, I didn't have to go through that locked door. I could have just turned around. Maybe that's that moment, that sycophant kind of moment of like, yeah, that's right. Now you're realizing you chose this. And you're realizing the choice was yours. Ha 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 ha. Maybe it's just a weird, like, comeuppance kind of feeling for her. I don't know.
There was that one point, though, where she mentions to Frederick that, and I forget how she phrases it, but something about in another life, he becomes a dentist and a pretty good one or something. So I don't know if that would have had to have done with if he had chose something different along the way within his regular life. Not the choice that she gives him or something, but like just before that and in his life, he could have done something. But
didn't. It's interesting you bring that up because I feel like she says it, but it's not like she's saying, oh, because of your choices. It's almost like, you know, maybe it is kind of his choices too, but it's kind of like if you hadn't fallen in the footsteps of your father and you actually just did your own thing, if your father hadn't gone down his road, you could have been a dentist. I don't know. Yeah. I'm trying to kind of understand, because that logic, it's not like the choices he's recently made would have affected him being a dentist. It's mostly like maybe because he's the oldest and he was the one that immediately was just kind of falling right behind Roderick, that she was kind of like, if you hadn't done that, you could have been a dentist. Like, if you basically hadn't just followed your father and been the first to obey and do that, you could have had a different path completely.
I agree. Yeah, I think that makes the most sense.
Anything else, guys?
Yeah, I will say, outside of Lenore, the character I think I felt the most sympathy for, even though she didn't have a ton to do, was Juno.
The wife.
Yeah, she didn't do anything wrong, and she wanted to get off the drugs and also was sympathetic in trying to actually bond with this family of insane people. And I remember even with the eldest daughter, when she was sitting in the audience and she caught a stray one from her when she threw that into the crowd. It's like, she's not doing anything. So I was happy to see her get a happy ending as well.
Yeah, like, she's definitely a character that you do kind of sympathize for because, like you said, like, she is trying to get off the drugs. She's just trying to be a stepmom. Like, she's like, I just want to have some relationship with you people, and all you've done is just crap on me. You haven't tried to get to know me. Like, I've tried to be nothing but supportive of you guys. Obviously, she went to the oldest daughter's opening, and she was in the front row, and she was kind of like, yeah, that's right. Like, I got your back, girl. Like, she's trying to be supportive. And
right.
Like, she's just a person who's trying to do her best, and she just got crapped on the whole way through. So at the end, it's like, you're really like, yeah, that's right. You got off the stupid drug, and I guess the only thing we haven't really talked about is the pharmaceutical aspect of this whole thing. I don't know. I just thought I liked that they chose kind of a touchy topic in today's society. And I think it was nice that he really kind of points the finger at Big Pharma, and he kind of lets him have it in this. And I think there's nothing that was, none of the message I think was incorrect. I think it's Big Pharma has got away with basically murdering people. And I think Mike Flanagan's, he was really good at pointing it out, and the way he did it, I thought was executed very well. I think it meshed really well with the storyline, with the post stories, with all of it. I think it was just done. I think it was done really well. And I think you do see at the end, like, just, you know, where Frederick is, or where Roderick is in the, you know, the fact that he knows, he knew what he was doing the whole time.
Right.
I did find that interesting. If not sort of an easy target, just because of how topical it is, what I found a little bit more interesting was when they started to delve a little bit into Madeline's projects that she was the working AI. On with the AI stuff, and how very topical that was, even though this was shot like however long ago, and that it came out when it did, and the implications, especially with the Lenore stuff. The app thing and everything, how that played out and came together towards the end there. So yeah, I was like, yeah, it's tying all these things in that are top of mind and for most people in a way that is making it very accessible for a lot of people to watch it, and tied into this whole horror element thing as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then I was just gonna mention, like, back to like the jump scares, like I like how Mike Flanagan always kind of like has these little Easter eggs kind of hidden throughout each episode, and some of them are scary and some of them are just interesting. And you know, the first one is obviously Roderick's mother kind of being in the background at the one shot behind Dupin, and then the shadow moves. It's just really subtle, but it's just like a it's creepy. It's super creepy. And then some are just, not that that didn't make me jump, but then like the, you know, there's other ones that are just really in your face, like Leo falling down directly in front of them on the floor. I jumped. That one got me. Yeah. And then the mirrors exploding behind him. Like the wall kind of exploding behind him. And then that made, I jumped so hard. I don't know why, but man, it just, that got me so bad. I was not prepared for that one. Was there anything that kind of creeped you out, Bobby?
Never. Unfortunately. Well, not, I shouldn't say unfortunately. Nothing ever creeps me out or scares me in any of these horror movies or shows, or because I've been watching them since I was not supposed to watch them when I was like probably 10 or 12. So for me, it's just a matter of how well it's done and being able to see where other people probably would get scared, or knowing that it's pulled off really well. Which isn't to say every now and then I don't get a jump scare that actually gets me a little bit, but it's pretty rare. But I always appreciate it. So when you were talking about stuff, I honestly was drawing a blank on that, because that stuff never, it rarely registers with me. So I couldn't remember anything specific.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I'm not saying, I definitely don't fall into nothing creeps me out. I mean, there's definitely shots where I'm like, oh, wow, that's creepy. But maybe it's also just me recognizing, I'm like, oh, that's a creepy moment, but I'm not like, oh my God, I'm not going to sleep tonight or anything. But
yeah, I don't think anything disturbed me to that point. Well, maybe the acid bath a little bit that night. I remember going by going, this is definitely pretty fresh in my head. We should have watched something cushier after.
Oh, really? That in particular?
I think it's just because we went straight to bed after watching a sea of gooey human mess. And I was like, yeah, we could have put something fluffy on for that for a few minutes, just so it wasn't so fresh in my eyes.
Okay.
It was like it burned into my head. But like overall, no, nothing really scared me. But yeah, there was definitely two that I can think of like that where total jump scared me. I was like, oh, Jesus. Like I definitely like jumped off the couch and like was like, oh, God, like that got me. That got me.
All right.
I just remembered one thing that creeped me out. And this is one thing that actually kind of quite does creep me out in real life to a certain degree too. And that's the cat.
Oh, really?
Especially when it's like creeping around and jumping out, and because that stuff happens in real life with cats.
Glowy eyes at night.
Yeah. So I think that's probably the thing that creeped me out, because it's a real thing. And cats can be unpredictable in that way, where it's, and they're quick, you know.
Yeah.
A cat wanted right. to scratch at you, it probably could, really.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that can creep me out, but I get what you're saying.
I think that, and again, I think it was the best visual death was the older sister one with the mirrors and the glass. That one's like, that one's very like, that one kind of makes my skin crawl, because for me that's like, it just seems like it's so unpleasant.
God.
Yeah. That one creeps me out. Well, I'm glad that it sounds like we all really liked it. It's got its things it needs to work on. There's some stuff, but overall, it sounds like we're all pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, you know, I could see where someone would listen to this and go, it sounds like they liked it, but I don't know, like, or at least for my review, for example. But if there's maybe nitpickiness or thing, you know, if it comes across like maybe a little more negative than I should be, this is also coming off, I mean, I didn't see Midnight Club, but for me, coming off of Midnight Mass, which I thought was basically a borderline masterpiece you know, as a miniseries, So, not to say, like, I expect that he'll make something just as good that soon. Every filmmaker ebbs and flows with the types of stories they're telling or, you know, how they're told. But that is such on a high pedestal for me that I watched this show and I thoroughly enjoyed it. But maybe I'll point out some of the flaws because it just doesn't quite live up to something like Midnight Mass for me. But I thought the show was solid. I thought it ended well. I liked the finale. I definitely would say it's worth a watch.
For sure.
But I've heard the argument, like, from someone who was apparently a Poe expert to a certain degree, who is like really nitpicking, like, well, this didn't adapt this very well, but I don't think that's what this show is trying to be. Like, the show is inspired by Poe and it's doing it in a different way. And if you're going into the show as someone who is like a, I don't know what you would call a Poe head, I don't know what they would be called. We'll go with Poe head. If you are like a diehard Poe fan that is like, all right, I can't wait to watch this show that's based on Poe.
To see these adaptations.
If you're going into this going, man, how are they going to adapt each one of these? Like, you might be disappointed. Yeah. I mean, I could be wrong because I don't really know Poe that well, but I think you would be, like, you're going into it with maybe the wrong kind of expectations.
Yeah. This is not a straight adaptation. It's a, okay, well, we can take a little bit of the story and now that story, we can kind of mold it into something else that's based off of that story. And that's kind of what they're doing here. And, you know, another thing, like, I didn't bump whenever they would quote some of the poetry. That actually, I didn't bump on any of that. I actually really kind of liked that, like, they used some of his actual poems throughout the series, especially at the end when he's quoting the Raven, you know? Like, I thought it was, I actually really enjoyed that. Like, for me, I was like, oh, that's really enjoyable. Like, it just, I liked it. It worked for me. And maybe that might not work for other people. They might be like, why are they quoting the poetry? Oh, that's so icky. But I actually enjoyed that part. I thought that was actually nice.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Well, with that, unless you guys have anything else, I think that'll do it for our thoughts on The Fall of the House of Usher. Thanks for listening. We would love to know what you thought of the show and our thoughts. You can reach out to us at feedback@flickereffect.com. You can find us on X, Twitter, whatever you want to call it, Instagram @flicker_effect, and on YouTube @youtube.com/flickereffect. With that, I'm Dave Lott.
I'm Bobby Jackson.
And I'm Michelle Hillard.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.